Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specing, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin. Press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls. The number to join us live on the call right now is 347-884-8327. Might want to jump on that pretty quick. I have a feeling the lines may fill up fast. Once you're on that call, if you've got a question, press 1 on your phone. A question, a comment, a topic, whatever it might be. Lisa will get to your call, and then we'll get to you here live on the show. I'm not going to spend any time talking about anything right now because we have a special guest tonight, and that's Bruce Mallinson from Pittsburgh Power, and we're going to get right to that. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Hello, Kevin. Long time I haven't talked to you.
Well, the only time we ever get to really spend any time talking to each other is when we get you on the show.
That's correct.
So we're just going to have to keep getting you on the show more often.
All you have to do is give me a call. A couple of days' notice is wonderful, too.
And I'm sure you've got some things that you want to talk about tonight, but before we do, I want to talk about that truck of yours.
Okay. My 89 T600.
Why don't you tell everybody what it is, the specs, why you built it, that kind of stuff.
Well, it's an ex-Viking motor freight truck. It had an 840 CPL. 350, big cam 4, had a 9-speed. I converted it to an 18 single over, 0.85 overdrive, 342 gears, low pro rubber. We put a Brock Adaride air ride front suspension on it. It has 6 inches of travel, 3 up, 3 down. Has the Moog steering stabilizer. I used to have a safety bus on it. And I'm not sure if I like the Safety Plus better than the Moog, but I think maybe I do. And we raised the cab in the bunk, put a subframe under it. We moved the frame as far in to the engine compartment as we could, and we put it on Dodge pickup truck cab mounts on the front and air ride on the rear. There's 3 airbags back there. It's got an air ride fifth wheel with 2 airbags. It's got a single axle 40,000-pound Hendrickson. I'm sorry, 20,000-pound Hendrickson suspension, Rockwell axle. And that's on 2 airbags with a 5-gallon Ping tank. And on the cab, let's go back to the cab. On the sub, we have an 1-inch diameter sway bar, and we have 2 race car shocks. They use on a drag car up in the front with the coil over the shock. We removed the coil spring. We have 19 adjustments for the ride. The rifle tank is rubber lined, and it's a 150-gallon water tank. There's a boom inside with a winch that picks up the motorcycle and stores it away behind the bunk. It's got the wraparound toolboxes and enclosure. Oh, what else can I tell you?
You had originally built this to pull a fifth-wheel trailer that you were touring.
Right.
You were out on the road. You were doing shows and seminars and that kind of stuff. So, and I want to go back to make sure everybody caught it. It's an 89 T600 with a mechanical Big Q Cummins in it.
And I did set the engine. I reflowed the injectors, reflowed the fuel pump, installed a dual fuel line kit, fast fuel system, changed the turbine housing. It has the two mufflers. What were those called? The stainless steel ones, those $1,100 mufflers. Liberators. It has two liberators on. I didn't buy them. They gave them to me to test. Put new carpet, new seats, new door panels, new dash panels, new gauges. Let's put it this way. I started out with a $19,500 truck, and I ended up with $105,000 in it.
I can see it even now.
So when people say, you know, I got carried away on redoing a project, that's one of them right there.
Well, I'll tell you, you can see it all. And the truck's been sitting for quite some time. It has been very well taken care of while it's been sitting. We borrowed it from you, and that's why we're talking about it. You were generous enough to allow us to borrow it to pull our new trailer. And we picked it up last week. Picked up the new trailer in Rochester, and we've been in it ever since. And I got to tell you, it's been a long time since I've driven a mechanical engine of any kind. And I've been driving electronic engines since probably 1990 when I bought my first Series 60. I think I've been in all electronic engines ever since. I might have had a cat somewhere in the early 90s there, but it's been a long time. And this isn't your normal run-of-the-mill mechanical engine. This thing's pretty hot.
Yeah, it's a beautiful driving engine. It's set at 500 horsepower. That was the third engine to have the mercury-filled engine balancer. That was the third one. No, I'm sorry, that was the first truck. And
is it? Okay.
I thought I noticed a difference, and then I built one for my brother's 444 and a Marmon. And then I built one for Calvin Katch for his 97 Pete with the 5EK cat in it.
It is a beautiful truck to drive. The ride is hard to describe. It's really solid on the road, very stable, very firm, but the ride is soft. So it's just a beautiful truck for its age. It's still in great condition. And driving the engine, like I say, it took me a bit, not that long, though. I mean, I kind of fell right back into the mechanical engine. RPMs are way different from what we talk about today. You know, barely let this truck under 1,600 ever. It's very comfortable between 1,600 and 2,000, really. And you've also got an interesting gauge in there that I've never driven with before, but I kind of had fun with, and that's the fuel pressure gauge you have in there.
The liquid-filled fuel pressure gauge, that was another one of our inventions. And it only works on the mechanical Cummins. And isn't it a beautiful gauge to drive by? What I like to do is play mind games with myself. I look at my fuel pressure gauge. I said, okay, I'm at this RPM. I'm at this many pounds of fuel. I should have X amount of pounds of turbo boost, and my exhaust gas temperature should be right around, say, 1,000 or 1,100. Keep in mind, that's on the hot side. And so when you have those four gauges to compare, it's almost like having a dyno going down the highway.
Well, you know, it's funny. You and I had never talked about what you just said right there, and I did the exact same thing as I started driving the truck. When I saw that gauge, I would start watching that gauge, and then I would look at the turbo boost gauge, and then I would look at the pyrometer, and then I'd look at the speed and the RPM, and I'd go back and forth between all those gauges, and you're right, you have so much information coming back that it was interesting to drive like that.
And that's what amazes me, is when a guy calls me and he's having low power, low fuel mileage, and I say, what's your boost gauge, what's your pyrometer, and you know the number one thing he says, I don't have those gauges. And it makes it so hard to be able to help this guy. I mean, a turbo boost gauge kit is only $68. And when you don't have it, where do you start when you're on the telephone?
So, well, you know, since you've been talking about it, since, you know, you started coming on our show and talking about those gauges, we've seen a lot more people start to do that, start to understand it, start to learn it. But nobody else in the industry is really teaching it or talking about it. So it's interesting when we have people who didn't know it
they've heard it from you on this show. Then they get the gauge, they start driving by it, and there really is a lot of information. And then you throw in this fuel pressure gauge, and, you know, I found myself doing exactly that. You know, really, you can go so easy on the throttle on this one, but, you know, watch, trying to keep the turbo boost down and the fuel pressure not too high. It still accelerates really nice. It's just been a fun experience driving it.
Whenever I picked that up in Kansas City at Boulevard Truck Sales in 1997 and driving it home, it bounced and rode so hard that I couldn't even adjust the volume of the radio. I had tears in my eyes thinking that I just wasted $19,500. And my goal was to make it pull like a truck and ride like a Cadillac. And I think we achieved that.
You absolutely did. It's been a lot of fun. So it's we're kind of parked for a while now, and I'm almost sad that we're off the road because I was having so much fun driving it.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel. I do miss not driving it. In fact, it's been sitting since 2003, and the furthest it moved was 4 years ago when we moved it to 22 miles from the old shop to the new shop. Other than that, Kevin, that poor thing has just been sitting outside.
Well, you know, and it's still, the interior is absolutely beautiful. The paint is really the only thing that suffered. You know, everything else in great condition on it. The engine runs fantastic. It's so smooth, and it's still mm-hmm. pulling great and running great. With a paint job, this would just be a gorgeous truck again. Yeah. And we put some miles on it. We picked it up at your place in Pittsburgh early last week. We drove it up to Rochester. We bobtailed up to Rochester with it. Then we hooked up the toy hauler we're in now and drove it from Rochester to Salem, Ohio. Spent a couple days there, and then we drove down here to Crossville, Tennessee. So we put some miles on it.
Oh, good. It needs some miles.
Yeah. It's
stretch
with the one
let
thing
it, let it run on. Run it pretty good sometimes. Let it breathe and stretch its legs. And it
well,
gets
you know,
sit up there at 90, 95 pulling that trail.
Well, you know me and how I drive. I mean, 60 miles an hour is tops for me. I spend most of my time at 58. So I really only put this truck in 18th gear one time and ran it up to about 67 miles an hour. But I would typically run it in about 17th. But I would keep the RPMs up on it. And at 17th gear, at 60 miles an hour, it's right dead on 1,700. And just runs great.
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're enjoying it. Now, the paint's okay. It's just the hood. We need a little bit of work on the hood, but we need to get the old decals off of it. And they certainly are hard to get off.
Yeah. Yeah, no question about that. But it's a very unique truck.
Well, thank you. And it is for sale. I'd sell it for $65,000.
Okay. All right. Well, what
I just don't have the time to use it anymore like I did.
Right. Right. It's definitely one of those trucks though that needs to be kept around and restored and kept in good condition because there really isn't I've never seen anything quite like it.
Well, thank you.
So what have you been what's been going on with you guys?
Well, we've been taking Acer cats and building them back to single turbos. And the last one we did, his first week, he was up 9/10 of a mile per gallon and two gears on the hill. And he said, my gosh, he said, I know I'm going to do better than 9/10. I'm learning how to drive this thing all over again. It was a 475 Acer. And now it's somewhere about 640 horsepower. We are working on ECMs now to delete the EGRs and delete the DPFs. We should have that. Our very first one is a 2009 T660 that runs California for FedEx, and that should be back on the road this week. It was so bad
okay.
that the owner parked it and rented a truck. He was having so many breakdowns, so we hope to eliminate that. If
We have recently taken an ISX and removed the EGR and removed the DPF and made it back to 2002, but, you know, that's about a $16,000 job.
Is it really? Wow.
Oh, yeah. Tremendous amount of work. Tremendous. To take an ACERT, an MXS, the 2005, 6, and 7 engine, back to a single turbo and to do it the proper way, it's a little over 3 days.
Wow. That's a lot of work.
You know, a lot of people say, why does it take so long? Well, because, you know, you got to pull off the twin turbos. You have to pull off those coolers, the manifold. You have to mount the new manifold, the new turbocharger. The cam gear has to be exchanged. The cam positioning sensor has to be relocated from the front of the engine to the back side of the timing case cover. Wiring harness has to be changed. ECM has to be changed. It's a lot of work involved.
It is a lot of work, but if somebody has one of those trucks, they're serious about keeping it, they really want to get back to performance and fuel economy and eliminate all the problems, it's definitely worth considering doing. And, you know, you guys, it's still somewhat experimental, but, you know, I think, and I've been talking about this a lot recently, is we've been playing around with different ways to make these EGR and ACERT engines run better. And I think the problem is when we try to go halfway or we try fixes or workarounds, I don't think the results have been very consistent. You know, sometimes somebody gets one and it runs okay, and then it doesn't run okay. And then somebody else gets one and it runs good, but 3 months later it's not running good again. And I don't know that we've ever really figured out any quick, easy way around any of this stuff. And I think what you guys are working on now is virtually eliminating all of it. And I think that may turn out to be the only way to make these things run right.
And here's something you have to think about. On the 2008 and newer trucks, and this was in a Kenworth. Was it Kenworth? No, it was a Peterbilt. They only have four wires to feed all the gauges. Four wires. The gauge, and I forget what it's called. Fernando knows these engineering terms. But the gauge pulls off the information that it needs, and the other signals continue to the other gauges. Well, whenever you go back to 2002, that ECM is made to have a wire to go to every gauge. And so now you have to figure out how to separate this.
Ah, okay.
And I'll tell you, thank God I have Fernando on staff, because with his mechanical engineering degree, he's been phenomenal on this, working with us.
Excellent.
It's
a lot of work, though. It's not simple.
It's not something we could have done in the backyard.
No, it's not simple at all. But it's interesting to see it coming along, and we'll certainly want you to come back on a regular basis and continue to give us updates on it.
And here's something that's come up twice. People were upset. They look on the website. They see the Caterpillar damper and the Caterpillar balancer, and they're painted yellow. That's right, because those are the ones we take to the shows. But whenever they order the new part, it comes in, it's not painted. And a guy called today, he was very upset. He's 40 miles away from the local parts store, and he didn't have any paint, and he wants to put his damper and balancer on, and he wanted to know why it wasn't painted yellow. And, well, think about it. If you go and buy a water pump for a small block Chevy or a Cat Cummins or Detroit, when you take it out of the box, it is not painted. And people should keep a couple cans of engine paint at home, because the new engines basically don't leak oil and they can rust. And after the pressure wash an engine, you should look at it and touch up places where you see cast iron showing through.
Got it. Okay. Hey, yeah, I know you and I could talk for the next hour easily, but what do you say we take some phone calls?
Hey, one last thing.
Sure.
We're going to Detroit. We're building a Pete glider kit with a Detroit. Wow, the thing came with no engine mounts, nothing to made up a Detroit to a Pete. So I got another challenge. It doesn't matter how old you get, we still have these challenges.
I know, always something. So you're doing a Pete with a Detroit. Which model Pete?
It's a 389. 389. 389 with a D-Deck for Detroit.
Wow, what are you going to do? You're going to have to make up wiring harnesses?
We have to make wiring harnesses. We have to come up with engine mounts. It just adds more work to it. Yeah, but we'll do it.
Interesting.
Sid Compton's just totally amazing, and it's a pleasure to have him in the shop and to work with him. I'd actually like to separate myself away from the phones and spend about 4 hours a day back in the shop working with Sid.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that when we were there, and we were kind of on a time schedule, and it was quite an adventure because since we had the RV, which was the 37-foot Discovery, which was what we were in before we bought this trailer, Lisa really hadn't driven it very much, just because I do all the driving and she normally works while we're driving. But when we stopped there, we were taking the Discovery up to trade it in. So when I got out to drive your truck, Lisa had to drive the RV. And, you know, leaving there, we went up to, I guess, 422, so you have to go up to Sharon. It gets pretty narrow, and it was raining, and that was kind of an adventure with her driving that. It was fun, but we were on kind of a schedule, but I felt the same way. I stopped and talked to Sid, and I didn't want to leave. You know, he is such a wealth of knowledge, and I got talking to him, and I thought, boy, I wish I could just spend the rest of the day here with him.
Yeah, yes, he is. He's a pleasure to work with.
Yeah, he really is. All right, what do you say we take some calls?
Let's do it.
All right, let's start off in Tennessee. Matt, welcome to the program.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hello there.
You guys were talking about fuel pressure gauge and other gauges. And,
yes.
Bruce, by the way, this is Matt Youngblood.
Hey, Matt, how are you?
Pretty good. Well, it just got me thinking of the first time that I met Bruce. Bruce, CMC in 08 that you came to with Fernando. And it seemed to be that was kind of a theme. I guess, Kevin, maybe we gave you a little bit of a education because everything you talked about, Bruce and I said, well, they make a gauge for that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I remember that. That was funny. Yeah.
Cause, you know, I mean, I run, you know, what you don't really recommend, but it's, you know, 16-liter cat and, you know, 379, but I can run this big cat all the way down to, you know, in the low 12s for RPMs. I cruise down the road at about 4 PSI on my manifold turbo.
Wow, that's getting down there.
Yeah. And I, Bruce, you know, about a month ago I put the Fleet air filters in.
Uh-huh.
And my last tank is the first one now I dropped under 7 miles to the gallon. But I'm sure everybody knows it was a little bit windy last week.
Yeah. Yeah, it was.
So
that's great.
I'm pretty impressed with that.
Yeah, that's
outstanding. By the way, we're a stocking dealer now for the Fleet air filters.
That's right. That's excellent.
Yeah.
I haven't got any reports back, but hopefully in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, that last tank now actually screwed me up a little bit. I was at about 0.2 of a gain. And now my month average for the month of October was a gain of 0.16 was my fuel mileage gain over the last 30 days.
Okay.
Excellent.
But, yeah, you know, like we were talking manifold pressure there, I really didn't notice it, but I'm like Bruce, you know, I can drive around all day with the radio shut off and just listen to my engine. I can hear the difference in the turbo.
Wow.
Just by changing the air filter.
Yeah, that's great. That's great. Can you hear the turbo be louder or quieter?
It's maybe slightly louder, but it's just the pitch. I can just hear a different pitch in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's pretty amazing that, I mean, you know, it's like the muffler change, too, and, you know, the air filters can really make that big of a difference.
when you have a free-flowing muffler on and the air filters and the boost gauge and the ported manifold and everything's running so free, and you get used to that one particular sound, and then when it changes, it makes you look down at the gauge and say, okay, all right, that's why it's changed. Yeah.
But that's really all I had. I just wanted to throw that out there that, you know, the big owner-operator spec trucks, you know, I'm used to Peterbilts, but have to cover that whole dash and gauges, there's a reason for it.
That is correct.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks for calling.
All right, good stuff. Let's go to, let's see, where are we headed to? Let's go to Arkansas. Robert, welcome to the program.
Hey, thanks for having me on. How you doing there, Bruce, Kevin?
Doing good.
Fine, thank you.
Okay. Hey, Bruce, I'm the guy that brought you all your chrome for that show truck, and I got the manifold from you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my old manifold started leaking on me last month, so I got by the shop and got that manifold put on, and using a tracking, watching my fuel mileage, so I'm going to watch it all next month to be able to see what it does for my fuel mileage.
Okay, let me know if you gained that quarter mile of the gallon, we say.
Yeah, I'm really curious. My last 3 months, I'm averaging like 7.6, and but the only thing is I put on the Fleet air filter today too, and what Matt was talking about, the hearing the turbo, where
mm-hmm.
I'm hearing it's when I let off, if I'm climbing a hill, it's kind of like the truck's breathing. I think because it's a totally different filter than what the stock standard OEM one is. What is it, got like a polished aluminum there, Kevin?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the changes to the Fleet air filters over time, and they haven't stopped. I mean, they're constantly working on new ideas down there. The original idea was just the element itself, replacing paper with, you know, multiple layers of foam, which, you know, it's kind of interesting. It breathes better, allows better airflow than paper, but also traps more dirt than paper. So it really works better in both ways. But then they started working on the housings themselves. They used to take the stock housing and wrap their foam around it. They started creating their own housings and actually designing the housing itself to create more airflow.
Yeah, that's probably why you can hear the turbo. I think I'm just hearing the turbo through the filter because it's not as restrictive as the old one. That's what I think it is.
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Know? And, go ahead.
The other thing they're working on, some of the different filter models now, is actually downsizing the filter within the housing to allow more airspace around it in the housing, which is working out pretty well on some of the models.
I noticed it's a lot smaller. There's a lot more room inside the stock housing there. I can't wait. I don't know if that's I like to only do one change a month so I can really track the fuel mileage and see, but, I mean, both of them together, it's kind of a, you know, it's just one of those things that worked out that way, you know.
Right.
So,
now, I want to tell you something about how to make the turbo live longer now that you can hear it when you decelerate.
Yeah.
If you take your foot off the throttle quickly, you're going to hear a woo 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 sound. That means that's trying to tear that turbine wheel from the shaft. And you don't want to hear that. That's saying that, hey, you backed off the throttle. You're pulling a hill and you backed off the throttle too fast. You know, we got to get back to this theory of driving like we have an egg between our foot and the throttle. You ease in and you ease out. And the problem is with a lot of the stock electronic engines, it don't have much response. People are used to gouging on it. But the reason for a lot of the turbine wheel failures is because it's getting out of the throttle too fast.
Okay. This engine has 840,000 miles on it. So,
the original turbo?
Yes. It's an Acer. It's a C15. Got 435 horse. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
hey,
right,
Kevin.
Well, good.
Kevin, I'm sorry. I'm the propane guy there. I'm sorry you had a bad experience. You know, with that test trial. You know, I got to be real careful the way I say my numbers because that one time I talked to you and Bruce, and I told you about how I put that new valve on, and I was getting, you know, it looked like a 3 mile per gallon increase Everyone jumped me about that, and I was that was an instant read. I would when I turned it off and turned it on, and I was telling you over a short distance, that wasn't an average over a month. I just do want to make myself corrected on that. And
right.
I took all my numbers from when I've owned this truck, and I finally put them into a. Have you ever heard of NumSum? It's a program online.
No.
Well, I'm cheap, so I try to do everything as inexpensive as possible. So I found this, and you have to write your own program. But I put all my numbers in, and just wanted to let you know, like the last 3 months. I it made me wonder if I was really getting that good of fuel mileage, and it's really important for people to do this, to track their numbers like this. And I got 7.43. This is after you ended it in July. I got 7.68 in August, and in September I got 7.65. The 3 months prior to that, using my propane, I got May I got. I'm sorry, April, I got 8.52. April, May, I got 8.98. Then the month that I stopped in July, I got 9.43 for the month. And that's team driving 20,000 miles on each month. So it was about 1.4 for me. Now, I run it at 55. And your test truck, you were explaining that after the test, that your driver is actually running it at 65?
Yeah. Pretty much on that truck when we were running it. We picked up about 0.8 at the best we got. We were playing around with different flows on the propane. But no matter, you know, we went from sometimes picking up 0.4 at the worst flow rate to picking up 0.8. And 0.8 is a big gain. And I understand why a lot of people put on the propane and go, wow, my fuel mileage went way up. And it did. 0.8 is huge. But...
Right.
And this was one of the more complicated calculations we had to do to stay on top of it. We were still spending more money. We were up 0.8 on diesel, but we were spending, you know, we were using 13 gallons, I think, 13 or 14 gallons of propane a day.
Right.
At the higher flow rate. So we were actually losing money.
Yeah, my flow rate actually now is, and I had said on the forums that I would set it up to 40 miles per gallon, which that's what I told Keith and them to do it on your truck. I'm actually at 55 right now. I'm getting about 55 miles per gallon on the propane, and I'm getting that. You know, anywhere between. See, the reason why my numbers vary so much is I do not buy the propane unless I can get it for $2 a gallon. Because you found that out when you had that propane generator. It's very expensive. You go to Jay's and all that. It's ridiculous. I mean, I won't even buy my propane there. Amazing because I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, there were just a lot of factors with that. When I'm going to move on, we got a ton of calls here. Let's go to Alberta. Abe, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin, how are you doing?
Doing good.
I had a question about the power box. Between me and my brother, we have two trucks. One's a Detroit and one's a Cat. And with the Detroit, we're pulling heavy, like grossing out about 140,000 pounds or so. And with the Detroit, it's got some problems, performance problems compared to the Cat. I was just wondering how the power box would work on that as far as the even startability, like to start off and stuff, if that would help it.
Yes, the power box, your ECM does not release much fuel until it sees about 8 pounds of turbo boost. Our power box releases fuel at 2 pounds of boost, which is almost instantly. So when you're hauling heavy like that, you wouldn't want to run it over power level 3. So you'd be between power level 2 and 3, and it would just help you pick up the load instantly and ease through the gears, and it would be a dream to drive.
Yeah. How about even at idle, like when it's slow tops or something, like we're going into old farmers and stuff where it's not always the best. And sometimes there's that issue with starting off, like you have to really give it a lot of throttle before we can get it going.
What we did was we did a lot of... We did a lot of testing on logging trucks, especially whenever they were running the 12-7 Detroit, and they were naturally off-road and down in the soft dirt, and they had to start out going uphill. And several of the guys from the Northwest had to get the loader to give them a shove to actually get the truck started. And once they put the power box on and just rolled into the throttle a little bit and let the clutch out, it picked it right up, and away it went. Now, keep in mind, at an idle, we do not add any more fuel. We have to see 2 pounds of boost. We can rewrite the program and have it come on as quick as a quarter pound of boost. But we found that coming on at 2 pounds of boost made just about everybody happy. And it worked great in the logging industry, and so that's where we left it.
How much would it help on fuel mileage on that one?
Usually we gain about 3/10. On your heavy haul, you usually gain a little bit more. The people that are in that 140,000 to 160,000 usually see about a mile of a gallon. The average 80,000 and less sees about 3/10.
Because they're pretty much the same trucks. They're the same specs and everything. One's got a 3406 cat, and it's quite a bit better in fuel mileage and everything, too, compared to that DDEC 4 Detroit.
Well, that's because the DDEC 4 has a very, very small turbocharger. If you go to the power box and go to our manifold and our turbo, and especially the muffler, you'll see the fuel come up and the drive of drastically come up. You're taking a smaller engine and you're working it very hard. They're trying to make it work with the 15-liter engine, so let's make it breathe better and give it some more fuel, and you'll see it probably will outdo the cat. Now, if you do the same thing to the cat, naturally, it's going to outdo the Detroit.
What's that?
If you do the same, make the same changes to the cat, once you make the changes to the Detroit, and if it outperforms fuel mileage and performance-wise, outperforms 406E, and then you do the same changes to it, if you put the power box and the muffler and the manifold and the turbo, you'll see the cat will actually still outperform the Detroit with that kind of weight on it. But you're talking a 12-7 versus a 15-liter engine.
And with that, Bruce, we're just going to keep rolling through some questions here because they're lining up and we're running out of time as usual when you're on with us. Let's go to Utah. Jim, welcome to the program.
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight?
Good. What's
thank
up?
I got an 03 bridge motor, and I heard you talking about that beginning of the week there, Kevin, and you said you had some tricks up your sleeve to get
okay.
These things to get fuel mileage and all
the first,
that.
The first thing we do to the bridge, you get me a copy of your CAF electronic technician configuration. It's a 5-page report, and any Caterpillar, Peterbilt, Kenworth dealer that has had their laptop on it, they have that stored. And you stop by and pick up a copy of that, and you fax it to us, and you fax it to Fernando, and we will build you an ECM. You'll gain about 105 horsepower. You'll gain anywhere from 7 to 9/10 mile per gallon. We have seen as much as a mile and a tenth, but on the average, it's 7 to 9/10. The bridge electronics will be gone. You plug off the wastegate. And then you run it that way. Then when the time comes and you need a turbo, we go to our one size larger performance turbo. And you make those changes, you'll find that that's a great running truck. The bridge engine's not bad. It just has bad electronics.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, the
years ago,
you know, it pulls good. You know, it's just, you know, we can't get no fuel mileage out of it.
Right. Right. That's because they have the timing drastically retarded on those bridges, and we have to change that, and we have to do the ECM. And you keep your old ECM with you, because if you're ever going back into a truck dealership or into Caterpillar, you got to take 10 minutes and put that ECM back on there. You don't want them to see a performance ECM on, or there's hell to be paid.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. Okay, now what was that thing that I got to get from the Cat dealer?
It's called Cat Electronic Technician Configuration. It's a 5-page report. It gives us your tire size, your transmission, and it gives us everything that the truck is doing. CAT Electronic Technician
Configuration.
Configuration.
Okay, then we send it out to you out there in Pittsburgh?
Yeah. It just fax it to us or mail it to us to the attention of Fernando, and give him a call, let him know it's coming, and he'll get the rest of your information, and in about a week and a half, we'll have an ECM to you, and you'll think it's a different truck. We have a guy in Texas. He buys every Kenworth and Peterbilt he can find with a Bridge Cat in it because he gets them down in price because everybody knows the Bridge is not a good engine.
Uh-huh.
We do them in ECM, and, God, I forget how many. I think he's up to like 28 of those Bridges now with the ECMs on them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Well, there's an interesting twist. Everybody else is avoiding him, and he's figured out a reason to get them.
Right.
He found a reason to get them because of our ECM. And when I worked that out several years ago, it's been quite a hit. I thought that we had them all converted, and there still are some out there that aren't.
Hmm. Okay, now what kind of money are we looking at for that ECM?
$2,850.
$2,850, okay.
$2,850, and when you think of a mod on a gun, that's a pretty quick payback, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, like, you know, me and the boss are talking, yeah, we're getting it back, but it's just that at first initial hit, the way these fuel prices are right now and these brokers.
Well, here's something to think about. A set of 7 or 8 inch stacks cost about the same amount of money. A set of chrome wheels for a Harley Davidson motorcycle costs about the same.
Yeah, and none of those have any real return on investment. So
if you can get
that kind of mileage and performance out of that Bridge, that could be one of the first things I'd be doing to a truck. And normally, we start off with the much less expensive stuff, but when you can make that big of an impact on an engine, that's the way I'd start. Let's head off to Nebraska this time. Victor, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's not, I don't have a real technical question, but I've got a little of a problem. I got a chance to put my trucks on, and it takes a special trailer, and evidently it's a little higher than normal, and I need a 45 and a 3/4 inch fifth wheel height. And I'm already running 11-22-5 low profile tires, and I just wondered, is there, what would be the easiest, if you change to a smaller wheel and tire, that'll change my ratio, and I didn't know, but I didn't really want to go that way, so I'm just wondering if there's any way you could get a shorter or a different fifth wheel, maybe. I didn't know. That's why I'm going to throw the question out there to you.
How many inches do we need to lower this by?
About an inch. I need about an inch. I'm 46 and 3/4, maybe a hair over that.
Now, you said something. You said it was an 11R 22.5 and then a low profile. Is it an 11R?
No, I didn't say it. I didn't mean to. It's low profile.
Okay. Oh, it is low profile, like a 295 or?
Yeah, that's what it is.
Okay. Yeah, we probably don't want to go any smaller on the tire. They make low profile fifth wheels, actually.
That's what I was wondering about.
You know, I wish I had my Peterbilt spec book because there's several pages of fifth wheel options in there, and I don't have that here with me. What I would do if I were you would call Holland and tell him what I had and how many inches can I lower it. And just get on the computer and go through Google or Bing and type in Holland fifth wheels and Fontaine fifth wheels.
Uh-huh.
Give them both a call and see who has the lowest one.
Okay. I just wondered about that. Like I said, I wasn't sure, and I appreciate you taking my question.
You're welcome. Pretty sure you're going to be able to make that up in the fifth wheel itself. An inch really isn't a whole lot. I think a low-profile fifth wheel is going to be able to make that up for you. Let's go to Rick in Georgia this time. Rick, welcome to the program.
How you doing, guys?
Doing good. What's
doing
up
good
tonight?
Thank you.
Mr. Bruce, Kenworth W900, with the way the exhaust is designed, how it comes out the turbo, faces to the back, and the Y pipe splits to the back, and then the muffler goes onto it. I kind of redid mine and have it come straight out the turbo, down along the transmission, and then split off to the pipe, so it's got no muffler on there. And it's my first week out with it. I just did two tanks, but I lost almost a half mile to the gallon. Would that, does that make any sense to you guys?
No, it doesn't. You lost a half mile to the gallon. That's incredible. On your turbo boost, is it higher or lower or the same?
It's just about the same. I usually get about, if I'm in a hard pull, the highest I've ever gotten up to was maybe about 35 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
And I got
now,
the...
What year W9 is this?
It's a 03 with a 6NZ.
03 with a 6NZ. Boy, that's a keeper. Okay, and did this have that reverse flow muffler where the exhaust came in the front and out the front?
Yes, sir. It came in the front and out the front. Yes, sir.
Yeah. Gosh, you should have gained a quarter to a half mile of the gallon.
And because my first week out with it was last week, I'm kind of wondering if the weather and the wind and anything like that, because I was in the Midwest a lot because I had something to do with it, but I was definitely hoping that I would see some kind of improvement.
Yeah. Are you running straight stacks?
Yes, sir.
And what diameter stack is it?
6-inch.
Okay, well, that's good. You ever get near our shop, I'd like to see what you did there.
I don't really do, but if I do get out there, I'd definitely like to come over there and at least buy you guys lunch, man.
Well, you don't have to
Rick.
Do that. We usually, or take pictures and email me the pictures of it.
Okay, I could do that.
Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah, Rick, certainly last week's weather was pretty wild in the Midwest. We were driving through it, a lot of wind, and you've got a W9, so the weather will affect you more than an aerodynamic truck. So one of the things we'd like to do is if you could calculate your 30-day running average prior to making the change, then let's look at a 30-day running average after, and let's see what happens with that. Now, you know, I was just talking with somebody about this today. Over the last 3 years of really tracking fuel mileage and helping people and making exhaust modifications, we've had two other cases where we did just a muffler change alone. One was with a Grand Rock muffler, and Bruce, one was with yours. And immediately upon making the change, the fuel mileage dropped. And we thought it was other factors, and we played around with a bunch of stuff on both of those cases. And after 30 days of playing around, we put the old mufflers back on and the fuel mileage came back. And nobody's ever been able to explain why. And it's only been two cases. Every other time we see an increase. And in those two, we just could not figure out what happened.
I was thinking maybe it would have something to do with back pressure or something like that. I was looking at the mufflers. I see Iowa 80, I think it is, got mufflers that you put inside the stacks. You know anything about those?
Yeah. Yes, I do. That's called a quiet spool, and it's made by Dynaflex, and they do make them for 6-inch, and you could try sliding that in there. Is your stack straight at the top? Do you have a miter cut stack, or do you have a turnout?
I got a turnout.
Okay. If you take the stack off the bottom, is it open down at the bottom, or does the bottom curve?
No, it's open at the bottom.
Okay, if it's straight at the bottom, then take the stack off and slide that quiet spool in there. You may have to use a block of wood and a hammer to help drive it in there because of the soot, because they're a pretty tight fit. Put two of those in there and try it.
But
before you do that,
me?
Rick, why don't you try getting a 30-day average before you do that?
Okay.
I'd like to see that. And then it'd be interesting to see what happens over a full 30 days where we can average out weather and loads and some of the other variables. And then if we still have a result, either, you know, your fuel economy went down or didn't go up, then it'd be interesting to do another 30-day test with the quiet spools after that.
Okay, I'm with it, because in reality, I honestly don't like the way this thing sounds now. It's way too loud for me, but I mean, if it's going to improve my fuel mileage, I guess I could live with it.
Now, you know what else? Down alongside We have a shorty muffler that's 31 inches long, and it's straight through, and it's made to fit down beside that transmission, and you could also try putting that on there, and that takes that harshness away.
It would fit in that space against the transmission and the frame rail?
Yeah, on the Peterbilt, it fits really well. I don't know if it would fit on the W9, but it is 10 inches in diameter. I do have one there that's a little bit smaller in diameter that might fit in there for you, and that'll help too.
All right, I guess I'll run this thing for 30 days, and I'll see what it does and get back to you, because if this thing is going to kill my fuel mileage, I definitely got to get rid of it.
No, we'll get it back up there.
Yeah, the couple times that it's happened, nobody's really been able to explain, and it could be something else went wrong in the truck. It's just, you know, every once in a while, we have really only two cases that I can think of. So give it 30 days. Let's get some numbers back and see what happens. Let's go to Anna Cortez. Jerry, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing good. What can we help you with tonight?
I've talked to both of you guys on several occasions at most all the truck shows. I'm the heavy haul guy that runs the heavy haul trucks up here in Washington, building the Freightliner still to this day.
Okay.
But the question I've got for you is I want to find out some information about synthetic oils in the motor. We've never ran them. We've always ran Delo. But I'm hearing more and more about synthetic oils. They can save you fuel mileage. You run longer between your oil, and half of my fleet right now runs the OPS system, so I'm wondering if that's even a bigger advantage for those trucks that we are running the OPS system on. But I haven't heard too much talk on synthetic oils for the motors.
I really like synthetics. I've been using them for years. With the OPS, for me, it's kind of a no-brainer. Without the OPS, I really couldn't justify the cost. And let me tell you what my experience has been with synthetic. We do get better fuel economy. It's a lighter, thinner oil, so the engine moves through the oil easier. Even though it's a lighter, thinner oil, we actually have better protection because of the way it's... Just to do a little clarification, I wish it would have never been called synthetic oil. That always gave me the impression that it's a man-made oil. It's not. It starts off as mineral oil just like every other oil. It just gets refined further than what we call mineral oil. So when you look at the molecule structure, it becomes thinner and stronger as they refine it down further into what we call synthetic. So we have better fuel economy, better protection, and cold weather starting is amazing because it doesn't thicken up. So those are the advantages that I've found. The claim that it goes longer usually doesn't work out. And the reason being is we almost always end up changing our oil because it became contaminated, not because it broke down. And synthetic will become contaminated really just about as quick as mineral oil will. So I don't really know that we get any extended drain out of it. But if we've got the OPS and we're getting, you know, 100 to even 200,000 miles on the drain anyway, it really doesn't matter. The cost isn't a factor anymore. But I tried it without extending the drains, without an OPS, and I really didn't see enough cost benefit to spending that much on it. Once we put the OPS on, we can get 100,000 miles or more out of the oil, then it absolutely makes sense for me.
Okay. Who is making the synthetic oil for the heavy trucks? Are all brands making them?
Almost everybody. Now, there are a couple, and every time I say this, I get nasty emails because people who use AMSOIL are really, you know, fond of AMSOIL. There's two synthetics that I've tried over, well, I haven't tried the AMSOIL. It's the results I get back from other people. Mobile One did not work out well for me at all. And AMSOIL, when I look at some of the oil sample results, didn't seem to hold up as well. Other people claim different. But other than that, I've tried Rotella synthetic over the years. Royal Purple, which is kind of a what they call a boutique oil or a designer oil. Royal Purple worked really well for me, and it was a blend. Right now we're using Premium Blue Synthetic, so almost every line now has a synthetic or a synthetic blend, one of the two.
What is Premium Blue? Is that Bello?
No, it's Castro. I'm sorry, Valvoline.
That's
okay.
Valvoline that was designed by Cummins, and you can buy it at Cummins, or you can even buy it. I buy mine, Valvoline Premium Blue, at CarQuest Auto Parts.
Yeah, and that's
actually
what we've got. I've got the Premium Blue in all three of my trucks right now. That's the oil we're running right now.
Okay. One other question I got about it. With it being a thinner oil, when you're getting to your 10,000 to 11,000 mile oil change, you know, even with our OPS system trucks, we bring them in, you know, and at 10,000, you know, you got to switch every other one where you're changing the filters on them, whether you're changing
right.
the truck filters or the OPS filters. In between the oil changes, are you burning any oil at all with the synthetic? Or
let's
very
talk
minimal?
About that, because it will change. How many miles are on the engines we're talking about?
Let's see. I've got one truck that, it's at just over 440,000 miles. I've got another truck that actually has 1.2 million miles on it, and a third truck that has... It's barely got 100,000. We in-framed it right at the same time we put the OPS system on it, so it's got about 100,000 on it.
Okay. The engine with 1.2 I would not switch over. The other two I would. And what you'll find is there's a break-in period because the rings literally have to reseat themselves because the oil thickness does change enough that when you first switch over, you do see more oil consumption. And then the rings kind of reseat, and that goes away. But when we get to a really high-mileage engine, anything over about 700, maybe 800,000, I'm a little more cautious because we've seen some engines where you switch over on a high-mileage, it starts burning a lot of oil, and it won't stop.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, but anything under 500,000 miles, I don't even worry about it. The higher mileage engine, I wouldn't switch over until you do the in-frame on it.
Until we do the in-frame on it, which,
Yep.
All righty. Well, thank you for the info. I do appreciate it.
Hey, let me say this. Once you do that in-frame, give it 25,000 miles to break in.
Yeah.
Run it on mineral oil for 25,000.
Well, I'll tell you what, Bruce, as usual, every time we have you on, the hour just flies by so fast, I can't believe it. Hey, we had a couple more calls we're not going to get to. I certainly was good talking to you again, and you got about 2 minutes. Anything you want to wrap it up with?
Oh, boy. Those two people that lost fuel mileage by changing their mufflers, I think I spoke to both of those people also, and without seeing the truck and checking things over, I have no idea why that happened. But do we sell about 200 mufflers a month? And almost all 200 people call back, and they're shocked at how much freer the truck runs. But occasionally, we got those two people that did have that problem, and there might have been one or two more. Other than that... Gosh, I don't know.
I know. And that's why it's
I can tell you on
because
my,
it's so unusual.
I can tell you I put the Valvoline Premium Blue in my old 96 Saab with 135,000 miles on it, and I put Lucas fuel conditioner in the gasoline, and I keep that car in Colorado and driving it around the Rocky Mountains. It went up a little over 2 miles to the gallon.
Wow.
And it's set up to 300 horsepower, and the thing just flies, and it's doing right at 29 and 30 miles to the gallon. And on my 95 Dodge with 208,000 miles on the B-Series Cummins pulling the snowmobile trailer, when I went to the Premium Blue, I went up 2 miles a gallon on it.
Yeah, I've been a big fan of synthetics for a long time. Hey, any phone numbers you want to give out before we wrap it up?
724-360-4080.
One more time.
724-360-4080. And the fax number
excellent.
For the guy that the fax number ends in 54085. For anyone that has a Bridge Cat and they want to fax us that Cat Electronic Technician configuration so that we can build them an ECM, you have the fax
excellent.
Number.
Excellent. All right.
And
we're all out of time, Bruce. Thanks for joining us, and we'll do it again real soon.
It's always my pleasure, Kevin. Enjoy my truck.
I will, absolutely. Thanks, everyone. Remember, be safe, be profitable, be responsible, and master the journey. Good night, everyone. I'm Kevin Rutherford.